You know, this should be Friday music.
It is in my mind.
Okay. Well, that's two of us. Margaret, you gonna chime in too, or Friday music?
I love Friday. Friday's awesome. Start of a wonderful weekend.
Friday music. All right, there we go. It is the trifecta. 590 WKZL. We just hit 80, by the way.
Good.
So, just in case you're wondering.
Yeah.
Apparently, our thermometers decided to act, interesting again. It was acting up earlier. We were talking to Bob, and it was probably, sometimes an 8 to 10 degree difference between what it read out there when it was hot.
Yeah.
Because we think there's some sort of temperature inversion going on in that hallway back there, that it just, there's no breeze, but it just, the heat goes in.
Yeah, and so, stays.
Your very own Bermuda Triangle.
And that is mine. Oh, it's the WKZO Triangle. All right. I don't know if I want one.
Pretty soon we'll be talking about the areas that aren't in a triangle.
Yeah, no kidding. It is Roger, and it is Jim, and it is State Representative Margaret O'Brien from Portage, and it is Denny Cooley over there who's having fun, and he's been in the last couple of days, and you're going to get familiar with him because Denny's going to be with us about Tuesday through Friday next week,
right?
And beyond that too,
So
which is a lot of fun. All right, so Margaret, before we get to Portage Northern Soccer, I have to ask you the same question that they asked Sean earlier today. Have you decided to do initial exploratory about running for the Senate seat in the new district?
Well, there really isn't an exploratory committee that you set up. You either file the paperwork to be a Senate candidate or you don't. I've not filed any paperwork. I'm waiting to see what Tanya's going to choose to do, what her final decision will be. And once she makes her final decision, then I'll look at it. I've just kept a watch. I enjoy serving the community. And I've been approached by some people who said, if Tanya moves into a new Senate seat, will you please run? And so I'm just continuing to serve. And Tanya will make her decision, and then I'll make my decision.
Cool. All right. Thank you. Now let's talk Portage Northern Soccer. Yeah.
Yay.
Your son, this is an interesting story. You're going to like this.
Well, it's...
This is cool.
When you have kids, you always want to see your kids challenge yourself. And this year has been great. My daughter's challenging herself by taking a fifth year of Spanish, which it's not been a strong suit for her, but she's challenging herself. And then on the soccer field, I see where my son's challenging himself. And it's been interesting, we had the preseason games, and it unclear if he was going to be a starter. Looked like he'd probably be one of the first people off the bench. And then we had some key injuries with some of our scorers. And so he started all the games since then, and he has scored, I think it's 6 goals now in 4 or 5 games. And it's just always so rewarding when you see your children stretch themselves and take advantage of an opportunity. And it really comes down to the teaching and the coaching. My son has always been a team player. Let's pass first if somebody has a better shot. And his coach has taught him, you can make these goals. Stretch yourself. Challenge it. Go for it. And so I'm very proud looking at my daughter and her challenging herself with Spanish, even though she wasn't sure she wanted to do it. And seeing my son challenge himself with soccer when he wasn't expected to be one of the scorers on the team, and now he is an important scorer on the team. It's just always rewarding to see your children accomplish things, and especially in my job where sometimes my kids pay quite the price for the job that I do with things that people say to them sometimes. It's very nice to be able to honor them and give back to them and recognize them for all their good work.
Yeah, and to see them rising to the occasion.
Exactly. Rising to the occasion, challenging yourself, and in education, there's so many opportunities. We are so blessed to be part of the Portage Public School System, and my kids go to Portage Northern.
Yay!
And yay, go Huskies!
Go Huskies.
Hey, we love the Mustangs, too. But,
No, we don't.
Bless Coach Fuhrer, who's done a great job. Jim French, who's the high school at Portage Northern. And that's where, from a policy perspective, I always struggle because, your state legislator can sometimes seem impersonal because we serve about 80,000 people, and then the state school board of education, who even knows who they are? And you look at your local school board, you look at your principals, your teachers, you know who they are. And so from a policy perspective, I say, I know the coach, I know the principal, I know the teachers, I trust them. So what should state do? What should stay local? Because you're able to have that direct interaction with the people who are working with your kids. And it's very rewarding. And you like being able to say, when the coach said, hey, your son's doing well. And I said, well, you know what, coach? Thank you. But that's you. Yeah. That's you setting the expectation high for him and higher than he probably thought he could achieve. And he's achieving it. But you set the bar high.
Yeah.
And learning can
take place in many locations.
Yes.
Sometimes on a soccer field.
See, I take that back about the Mustangs. Once you graduate, you become a Portage fan. Now, yeah. I root for the Huskies against the Mustangs when they play each other.
That's funny. It didn't work that way with me. I'm still not a Portage fan. I root for Norix.
Okay.
Yeah.
Still not a Kalamazoo Central fan at all.
No, right? No. That's where I did my substitute teaching.
See, but that's funny because Loy Norix's rival is Kalamazoo Central.
Yeah.
Whereas Northern's is Central, you know, in Portage.
Well, I was just saying that after I graduated, I didn't develop affection for Portage. I remained loyal to my alma mater.
Here's the thing, though. My alma mater's Mattawan. I always threaten my son when Northern plays Mattawan, do you want me to drag out the Mattawan paraphernalia? But what's interesting in the soccer community, and I lovingly call it a cult, we're a very close community. So no matter what local team we play, I know many of the kids on the field, on the other team. Yeah. I know the families. And so you sit there and say, I want my kid to succeed, but at the same time, I don't want his friend to lose.
Yeah.
And so you sit on pins and needles because there's so many wonderful kids in our community.
Yeah.
And you just hate putting one up at the expense of another. So you hope it's a really great game, close, and we edge them out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What you don't want to see is a 59-0 game in a football game.
Or in soccer, it would be like 5 or 6 to nothing.
Yeah.
That's like
you don't want to see the other team shut out. You want to see your team win by hard work and teamsmanship and just pull it out.
You want them to earn
it. That's a new word, I think, yeah.
Yes, you want them to earn it. Portage Northern had a very strong game last night and did win 8-0. And those are tough games because, you know, it's tough. Yes, you do like being able to shut somebody else out, but at the same time, you're like, ugh. It's more fun to watch as a spectator those very close games.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, the trifecta brought to you in part by Theater Kalamazoo, home to more than a dozen producing theaters in Southwest Michigan. Visit theaterkalamazoo.com for a full listing of theaters and upcoming shows. Roger put this on the agenda because he thinks it's funny.
No, I
and
don't
I think
it's
hilarious.
Funny.
I think it's hilarious.
And I'm not gloating about it.
Yes,
it is just an interesting factoid.
Yeah, but
Bill Clinton made a speech supporting Obamacare. There's no surprise. But in that speech, he mentioned that more Republicans took advantage of covering their children with the parents' health care to age 26. More Republicans took advantage of that portion of Obamacare than did independents by a small margin, but a big margin over Democrats. And I found that interesting. This was something that many Republicans obviously benefited from. So the Tampa Bay Times, their PolitiFact.com, which has a good reputation for being, they got a Pulitzer. Yeah, thank you. They look at these things dispassionately, and they did a poll of young people 19 to 25 and asked them if they had signed on to their parents' plan, yes or no. And Republicans, 63% of the young people signed on to their parents' plan, 36% declined. Independents, very close, 62% went on their parents' insurance, and 38% declined. And yet in Democrats, only 45% signed on, and 55% did not sign on to their parents' plan. And I found that to be interesting, partly because the Republicans in the House of Representatives in Washington have voted to repeal Obamacare, 40 times now?
Something like that.
And yet many of their constituents appear to be benefiting from Obamacare. Now, as for why fewer Democrats, I've mentioned before that when my wife appeared to have a chance of losing her job because of budget cuts. We were going to have to move to Costa Rica for a couple of years until we could qualify for Medicare, because both of us have pre-existing conditions. And so our children, if we had any in that age group, would have been denied the ability to stay on our policy. And if you're uninsured, the only thing you get to offer your kids is the chance to be uninsured as well. And so I'm not surprised by the numbers. When you look at the demographics of the parties, Republicans tend to be more affluent. They would have higher probability of having health insurance. And so it makes sense to me that more of their kids would avail themselves of staying on mom and dad's health insurance until they were 26 years old.
It is kind of interesting, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I found it interesting. I'm not gloating. I'm not rubbing anybody's nose in it. I'm just saying interesting facts from a neutral source.
Not yet, though. That's it, Margaret. Not yet.
Not yet.
Are you going to rub it in later?
No.
No? Really?
No, I'm done.
Wow. Look at you taking a high road.
Yeah.
You're the man. I did find it was interesting, and I also I found it was interesting the Commonwealth Fund was the one that checked it out, because they are notorious for, you know, or noted for doing this type of thing, and mm-hmm. that was good for them. I mean, they did a thorough job and checked it out, and it is true. Now, we did get a snarky text, because more Republicans are probably working.
Well, that could very well be. Hey, before we go to break, Stadium Drive is a complete mess. Traffic backed up as far as Drake Road and Howard. Stay off Stadium Drive if you're on the way home, and especially don't go around Rambling Road in Stadium Drive.
Not at all. All right, coming up more, it is the Trifecta 590 WKZO. Got that right. It is the Trifecta, brought to you in part by Comerica Bank, focused on business for nearly 150 years. Visit comerica.com/business. Once again, we are honored by the presence of 60th District State Representative Margaret O'Brien, who's sitting in today. It's nice to have her here.
Thank you for having me, and it's 61st.
61st. Why do I keep screwing that up? You're my representative, though.
Hello.
Jeez, shut up, man.
He just wants to give me more territory to cover.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah. More responsibility, but the same pay.
I know. Sean's a good guy, but the people in the 60th really want... No, I'm just kidding.
I'm Roger's state representative, too.
Uh-huh.
I've harassed him at his doorstep.
Yeah.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah.
My mom.
I start peering in windows. Roger, I know you're there.
Yeah. Yeah. She was knocking on the bay window one day.
They were walking through, she and Tanya Shoemaker were walking through the neighborhood my parents lived mm-hmm. in, and my mom got a visit from both of them at the same time.
I did, too.
She loves it.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, this is too cool. This is really...
That's the best part of campaigning, is talking to people on their doorstep. Mm-hmm. That is the most fun you have.
Depends on if they like you or not. Because in a previous life, I used to do door-to-door, and I would catch it from a few people just once in a while.
That's actually some of the fun, too.
But it is. It is. And, you know, and you're never going to convince them.
And handling objections.
Yeah. And, you just sit there and listen to them and say, all right, thank you very much. I'm good. I'm good. Speaking of... having fun. Kalamazoo City Commission is going to have fun. The search is entering the home stretch. Story can be found at WKZO.com. There are 12 candidates, two local, 10 from outside the community. One of the two local candidates is Public Safety Chief Jeff Hadley. So go, Chief. I'm telling you.
Chief Good Hadley stuff. Does a wonderful job.
He does. He really does. So each of the commissioners have the packets. They're going to go over them. There's a meeting at 4 o'clock on Monday, special meeting. They're going to narrow the list down. So I'm going to ask you, I'm going to go around, and even Denny can chime in on this one, too, because you're in the microphone.
We'll share a mic.
Okay, so briefly, before we go to break, what is the most important issue that a city manager coming in has to deal with?
Who do you want to go first?
You.
Okay. I would say public safety.
Public safety?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Denny?
I would agree with Roger. Public safety.
Yeah, right. And Margaret?
Long-term perspective.
See, now I'm going to agree with Margaret and zero in on budget, because I think the city of Kalamazoo has an admirable, maybe not be the term, the city of Kalamazoo and the county of Kalamazoo are islands when it comes to fiscal responsibility and doing what you're supposed to do to keep your governmental unit afloat.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a great job. And I think the city commission needs to be lauded for that. I think the county commission needs to be lauded for that. Ken Collard with the city, Peter Batani with the county, they've done a great job.
But Portage has done a good
and
job.
Portage,
it isn't just a number of communities here.
We seem to have three large governmental units that are doing their due diligence to make sure that they keep their heads above water.
Yeah.
But the wall's coming. I'm telling you, it is. And at some point in time, and I really believe that if city manager's coming in, I think that may be the thing they ask them the most. What are your long-term prospects for budgetary stability?
I think
1A is going to be public safety.
I think you guys who chose long-term planning are onto something. But if we don't keep our cities safe and a comfortable place to live and bring up kids, first things first, you aren't going to have a long-term plan if nobody's living in your community anymore.
Yeah. But that's part of the long-term plan. When I look at long-term planning, I think, what are the priorities? What is it that government is supposed to do? Government should be providing for people what we as individuals or as a community can't do ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, roads, public safety, firefighting, you know, things like that. And so that is, you know, when you look at long-term perspective, it's if we want a healthy and safe community for the long term, what are the components we need?
Yeah.
And like you mentioned with the recent study done on public safety, you know, bless Chief Hadley for everything he's doing in the police force and the city commission. You know, just making sure they're doing a long-term implementation so it's not just let's put the fire out right now and maybe miss some things long-term. And that's where I think Chief Hadley's doing an amazing job at saying, you know, this is a cultural change. We're working on this long-term. It's very easy as elected officials to try to solve everything today. Sometimes you got to be honest and say, it's going to take me a year to solve this.
Or longer. Some cases.
Yes.
It's a long-term issue, folks.
And lay out the steps and work with the public on every step. So the long-term perspective includes everything that you shared.
And you can make those steps measurable.
Yes.
Yeah.
You heard of the phrase, you got to have art?
Yeah.
Well, maybe not.
Oh.
And it's Detroit again.
Oh. Uh-oh.
CBS and local news next. It is the trifecta. $590 WKZO, it is the trifecta. What would Friday be without The Cure? I'm telling you. You know?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
20 to 5. The weekend begins in 20 minutes and 5 seconds.
If you lived in Newfoundland, you'd be in the weekend. You know that, don't
you? Oh,
yeah. Because it's always 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah.
Gotta love it. By the way, the trifecta brought to you in part by Asthma Allergy Centers of Southwest Michigan for the office nearest you. Visit asthmaallergycenters.com and by Lake Michigan Credit Union, the best place for your money. Learn more at lmcu.org. So it's Roger, and it's Jim, and it's State Representative Margaret O'Brien. And Denny now has joined us in the studio.
Thank you, Max.
What's up?
Good to be back with you.
Quattrofecta?
Quattro.
No,
yeah.
We're the quad squad.
This is an attempt to make up for the days when the trifecta was two.
Yeah. So we're the unofecta, the dynamic duo, the trifecta, the quad squad, and we haven't come up with five yet.
Yeah, but on average, it's
Avengers,
a trifecta.
Yes. Right. On average, it's a trifecta. All right. So we have wait a minute. We got to. There we go. We talk about Detroit. You got to play that Detroit music. Apparently, Kevin with a Y is at it again, is acknowledged during a deposition last week that the collection of artifacts at the Detroit Institute of Arts may have to be put up as collateral to secure some financing. Now, here's the thing. It doesn't mean it's going to be sold. It's just it's fair game as collateral, which means if Detroit would default on those loans, they could come in, the lien holder or whatever could come in and take some art. And we all know what that type of situation has wrought before. People are not happy. They're not happy at all.
Well,
Mel Brooks Patterson being one of them.
That was who I was going to bring up.
Yeah.
He's already threatening to pull out of the Tri-County agreement to support the arts.
He wants to ruin the trifecta? What's the matter with him?
No, his work is already done, but no. He's saying that if anything happens to the DIA, that Oakland County will pull out of their obligation to support the arts. And all it would take is perhaps using the art as collateral, which in his mind could be interpreted as putting that collateral at risk. And this could open up a whole new can of worms.
Yeah, this is the first time this has ever happened. Even when Stockton went bankrupt, I don't believe their art collection was mentioned at all, if they have one. I don't know. Is there a Stockton Institute? I don't know.
Well, here's what you have the issue is when you have a government municipality who has ownership or financial connections with all these different entities, then if one entity goes bad, it takes down everybody else. So I think the perspective Brooks Patterson is probably taking is they have a tri-county millage that supports the Detroit Institute of Arts. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to say, we're not going to sell the art, but we're going to be borrowing money against the art, well, there's three counties that pay for that museum, and it is illegal for one government municipality to be subsidizing another directly, and that would be a direct subsidy. It'd be saying Detroit has a debt, and now the surrounding counties have an obligation to satisfy some of the debt through this partnership. So what you're looking at is very complex situations, and you know, Detroit Institute of Art, I'm not sure why it's not spun off as its own independent entity, why the art should be totally disconnected from the city of Detroit. Mm-hmm. This is a danger when people think government should be in all these different things. This is why keep government to the limit of what it should be, a very limited form, and let the Detroit Institute of Arts be a charity not connected to government.
I would think it's a nonprofit and it's a private organization, right?
It's clearly connected to the city of Detroit because the art's connected to the city of Detroit. You've got millages that are supporting it. It is not totally disconnected.
Okay.
And I'm not a big fan of L. Brooks Patterson, but in this case, I see his point.
Oh, no, I see.
Why is Oakland County going to pay to support the DIA if there ain't no art there?
Well, and one of the things that, and I'm reading through this, and it's an editorial, by the way, in the Detroit News, Dan Calabresi, and we've talked about him before. You know, there's a paragraph in here that really, really hits home. And a couple of statements, just really quickly, using the quoting fingers. That the fact that some of the art may be purchased by a private collector and may not be on public display, using the quotes, that would be a shame, I guess, but a lot of things happen to you that are a shame when you go $18 billion in debt. That goes not only for the elected officials who made the irresponsible fiscal decisions, but also for the people who elected them. You think? Well, I mean, how many times have we gone and we talked about this that, and he mentions two of our favorite people, by the way, down the way. I know you see that. If you want priceless art to be owned by your city and held in trust, stop voting for Charles Pugh, Joanne Watson, and Kwame Kenyatta, and then you might have, you know, priceless art. At some point in time, and I mean, I hate for them to have to use this for collateral, but at some point in time, the realism is going to hit Detroit right between the eyes, or officials in Detroit, and I think Kevin with a Y is trying to bring them to that trough that you have to sit there and say, okay, look, you're $18 billion in debt. This is a unique situation that we've never had to deal with before. And you got a federal judge who's going to look for every single solitary asset to be utilized in whatever way they have to. And if the art goes that way, then the art goes that way. That's just the way it is, whether you like it or not.
You know, whether the state has any obligation to help Detroit, I can see why that's a debatable topic.
Yes.
Detroit, to a considerable extent, got themselves into this mess. But when you see multiple counties involved in, for instance, the DIA, maybe there's a role for the state to step in when there are multiple counties involved in a specific issue.
You see that happening,
well,
Margaret?
No, because when we look at it, it wasn't the state who decided the Detroit Institute of Arts was going to have a financial connection, and obviously somehow it's embedded within the city of Detroit. You know, the state didn't cause this relationship to happen. The voters chose for this relationship to happen. And when we look at the $18 billion in debt, you know, the state did try to intervene with the emergency manager, but then some of the people who had, that Detroit owned a lot of debt to, were getting ready to make some filings in court. And so then the state, through their emergency manager, had to file for bankruptcy to protect, to try to negotiate. They had to hold it for a negotiating vantage. You know, the state didn't make this. The art, yes, it's priceless. I would love for it to stay in Michigan. I'm not sure why their art institute isn't separate like our art institute is. If you really want this art to be held protected, don't give it to the city of Detroit. Don't give it to any city. Because, you know, the ending paragraph when Dan talks about, you know, what the choices are, we love art. We value art. But when you say, we can't afford police officers to respond to shootings, we can't afford ambulances, we can't afford health care, there's tough decisions and those aren't desirable. And that's the reality Detroit has to face. I am hoping the federal bankruptcy judge will find a way not to put the art at risk. But we got people whose livelihoods, well, their lives are on the line here.
Right.
And that is the number one priority.
Now, that hearing is coming up next week or the following week, right?
You know, I'm not involved in the bankruptcy hearings at all, but I'm imagining they're having ongoing hearings.
Yeah, I know the initial hearing is coming up in middle September, but I don't know the date.
Now I'm going to dovetail off what Roger said, because there's a possible solution or a possible, what is that, curveball thrown in here?
Mm-hmm.
If they can prove, and Al Brooks Patterson would be the obvious one to do this, if they can prove that the Detroit Institute of Arts is cooperatively owned, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
by not just the city of Detroit, but by, and obviously can do that if they're putting in subsidies or whatever, then I don't think it can be considered an asset of the city of Detroit, because the city of Detroit doesn't own it.
Sure it can.
You're talking about the Tri-County area?
It's not a separate entity. It existed before the millage happened. The millage does not say it's owned by three counties. It's like when, if a husband and wife, if the husband decides he's going to go bankrupt, guess what? The wife goes through the process with him. She's bankrupt, too. So in a marriage, if one chooses bankruptcy, they're both bankrupt.
So here, the
DIA is not owned by the three counties. There's a millage that supports them. It would be like if transit went bankrupt. The transit has its assets. You can't say because Portage residents pay for a bus, you can't touch transit. No, it's a millage that goes to it. And so for me, it's just the danger when you've got a wonderful organization that's doing stuff. It's time to spin it off and let it be its own entity, because when it can be its own entity, it can be its most protected. It's linked.
Is that why you think maybe Patterson is?
He's doing due diligence for his constituents and saying, we are not going to fund an institute that all this debt has now been taken out on this art. And so we're, in essence, going to be paying back debt for somebody else. So, you know, I know he does like to make headlines, but I think here on this point, he's trying to protect his taxpayers. And hopefully, when I am confident Detroit will get out of this, and I have a lot of optimism we're going to keep this art, I hope the DIA will be spun off financially, and the only assistance they're going to get would be in annual charitable contributions from the city of Detroit versus being so connected. They need to be their own separate entity.
Margaret, wouldn't it be possible for the state to step in and to sort of view the DIA as a state service, and especially the services that touch not only the people who live in Detroit, and they're going to have to take responsibility for Detroit's problems, but when you see other entities being impacted, isn't that what a state government is for, is to get beyond these petty parochial boundaries in the Detroit area and look at service to the citizens in general?
Well, It's in bankruptcy court now. The judge has all the power. The state doesn't have the power. The only way the state could take over total control of the Detroit Institute of Arts is if we take care of the $18 billion in debt that Detroit has to get them out of the management. I mean, if $18 billion, we could give a lot more money to education. We could do a lot more other things. So at this point, the state has no role in stepping in and trying to tell a federal bankruptcy judge what to do. This is out of our hands. And I would say the taxpayers across Michigan would not be happy if the state gave an $18 billion check to the city of Detroit, because the fact is we only have about $600 million in our savings account. We don't have $18 billion, so that'd mean the state either needs to go $18 billion in debt or we're cutting out everything to be able to pay for it. The state has no ability, and unfortunately, it's been long-term actions that have caused this problem. I'm just confident that if we can work this process, that we can find a bright future, keep the art, and I appreciate Kevin Orr being very honest that the reality exists that the federal bankruptcy judge may make a decision that we don't like about this art.
I don't know that I agree that we've exhausted looking at this topic, and the only way to fix the problem is to give Detroit $18 billion. That seems to be jumping to a conclusion without doing due diligence to get there, but we've got a call waiting to.
George, how are you?
Real good. I guess we have to separate the two problems here. The idea of the cops and the fire protection, all that, is an operating problem. The bankruptcy court is involved with a debt problem. And the two are completely separate issues as far as I can see, and I think the bankruptcy court views them. I think the creditors, depending on which one gets screwed or shafted at the end, could take this to the appeals court, and we'll be setting some new case law on whether the DIA art is an asset or not.
Yeah.
And George, I appreciate you saying that the two are separated.
Thanks, George. We appreciate it.
And while they are, they're not. How they got that $18 billion of debt, part of it was they continued to borrow money because they weren't managing their operating expenses. So that's how it got there. They kept doing short-term loans, kept refinancing loans, and they weren't making the hard decisions about operational. You are absolutely right that going forward, you got debt, you got operating. Those are two issues. But looking at the past, if they don't resolve this, that's how they got $18 billion in debt, was mismanaging their annual operating expenses.
Time flies when you're having fun, huh?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back to wrap up the week and this edition of the Trifecta on 590 WKZL. Roger's favorite song, because it means we're at the end.
We go now.
Yeah. Lots of sports. Tigers tonight, 7:45. They take on the Royals in Kansas City. You can hear that on 590 WKZL.
Wow. Tigers always have trouble in Kansas City.
Man,
you know, we'll see
you
what happens there.
All right, so the high school game of the week on 1660 The Fan tonight, 6:45. Carolyn and a special guest commentator.
And what game are they?
That is Schoolcraft versus Constantine, big KVA rivalry.
Ooh. Go Eagles.
Big stuff. All right, Western Michigan football tomorrow, 6 p.m. Against Nicholls State. It's Communiversity Night. Get out there. That's going to be on 96.5, our sister station, WZOX. Z96.5. Michigan State football here on 590 WKZO tomorrow, starting at 10 a.m. pregame versus South Florida at Spartan Stadium. On our sister station, 1660 The Fan, Notre Dame.
Big
one. Taking a trip to the big house. Maybe the last one for a while, too, as they take on University of Michigan. And you can hear that game beginning at 7 p.m. So let's hope the rain stays away.
That's a great game.
Big, big weekend. And the Lions start. Yeah, thank you.
Will they start losing? Is that what you're saying?
Could be. There, okay. Raj, could be.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
So anyway, they 12 o'clock pregame on 1660 The Fan. They take on the Minnesota Vikings. So, Margaret, thank you so much for coming in.
Always fun.
Always
thanks,
nice to
Margaret.
Have you here. Denny,
hey,
see you next week, brother.
Had a ball.
All right.
A ball.
We'll be back same bad time, same bad channel next week. 5 o'clock afternoon news is next.
Kalamazoo's news, weather, and traffic station is 590 WKZO. Kalamazoo.